our series of the ABC's competition talks with leading experts, we have today Yossi Spiegel, professor at Tel Aviv University. Yossi works in the field of industrial organization with emphasis on competition policy issues and has published extensively in many international academic journals. Currently, Yossi serves as the president of the Israel Economic Association and as co-editor of the Journal of Economics and Management Strategy, associate editor at Economic Letters, and a guest editor of IGIO. Yossi Spiegel is a member of the Economic Advisory Group on Competition Policy for the Chief Competition Economist in the European Commission's DGCOM and a member of the Executive Committee of the Association of Competition Economists. Recently, Yossi has written about the impact of horizontal cross and common ownership on competition. This topic is highly relevant, especially given the rise in overlapping ownership across numerous industries over the past decades. So this is a topic that has come to the forefront of competition policy discussions. Yossi, welcome to the ADC. It's a real pleasure to have you here. Thank you very much for your availability to do this podcast with you. And we are all looking forward, the listeners of this podcast, to hear your views on competition and cross-ownership.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, one of the key features from your recent papers, your recent research, relates to asymmetric partial cross-ownership by competing firms, and on whether an increase in the stake that one firm holds in the rival affects investment and prices, and ultimately consumer welfare. Could you take us through your key findings, the insights from your research?
Yes, so what we find is that cross-ownership can have various effects on competition. The effects work in the following way. Firms impose positive and negative externalities on each other. The most obvious one is that if you compete more aggressively, you harm your rival. But then, you know, if you expand the market size, then your rival is going to benefit from that. And if there are vertical relationships, then we know that there are downstream and upstream moral hazard issues. Because if an upstream supplier invests more, it can help the downstream firms. If the downstream firms invest more, it can help the upstream supplier. So all of these externalities are not accounted for when firms make their decisions, which sometimes can be good for consumers, because if you don't take into account the negative externality on rivals, you are going to price more aggressively, and that helps consumers. But sometimes the externalities which are not accounted for harm consumers. So for instance, if you have vertical relationships and you have, say, double marginalization issues, if this double marginalization is taken into account by cross-ownership, it is internalized, actually it helps consumers. So basically my research tries to understand how the partial internalization of the externalities, and it's partial because cross-ownership means that you hold less than 100% stake in a rival, so you don't fully internalize the effect. So how partial internalization of externalities affect consumers. And basically, the research shows that things really depend on the nature of the externalities, whether they are positive or negative. And it depends on the nature of competition. And it depends on the various stakes. In particular, my research focuses on cases where the stakes that firms hold in each other are not symmetric and are not the same. And the bottom line is that results can go in various directions. It is not clear-cut good or clear-cut bad, but we try to identify cases where it is good or bad and try to identify the factors that matter. So that, practitioners, when they examine cases, will know which factors to look at and how to account for them.
Indeed, and it's like putting steroids on effects, right, across the industry. But in a horizontal setting, if you are speaking about a common ownership structure in horizontal competitors, in rivals, This is of course something that has been brought to the forefront more recently. How do you see, with how much concern do you see increasing stakes in terms of cross common ownership in some industries? Which industries do you think enforcers should be more concerned with? And do you think we are lagging competition agencies in terms of incorporating such effects in their assessments?
Yes, so I think that competition agencies are not really happy to look at cross-ownership. My only guess is that as it is, competition authorities are stretched because they have lots of work to do and probably not enough resources. If you need to start examining cross-ownership, the amount of work is going to increase a lot. And if you don't have the resources, then maybe that's not a good idea. But the research suggests that even relatively small stakes in rivals can have large effects on consumers. So potentially these are important issues. I would be particularly worried about industries where you have cross-ownership with many firms that invest in many others. So for example, the automobile industry is one where firms have stakes in each other. The steel industry, the global steel industry, some electricity markets. So whenever you have a whole network of investments in rivals, these are industries that I would examine closely.
Indeed, and we might be missing the magnitude of price increases that result from structural changes in the market. At the Portuguese Competition Authority, we did it once in a merger simulation, but which we commissioned. But there's maybe also a lack of simple measures or simple indicators that incorporate these elements apart from the modified HHI, right?
Right, so I agree. So if somebody told me, okay, I'm concerned about cross-ownership, how would you suggest that I would examine the impact? I'm not sure that I can have a simple tool to provide. I think research is not there yet. Modified HHI is definitely a tool that can be used because we know how to compute it. What I'm not sure is what exactly you learn from looking at the numbers. Like, it increases by 100 points. How worried should you be? I'm not sure because I'm not sure that there is a clear linkage between the modified HHI and competitive outcome. Having said that, let me tell you that in a recent paper that I published in the Journal of Industrial Economics, I showed that HHI, but also the modified HHI, reflect the ratio of producer surplus to consumer surplus, meaning that it shows you how the total surplus which is generated in the industry is divided between consumers and firms, and also an increase in the modified HHI or the HHI. The HHI basically is a private case of modified HHI when there is no common ownership. The thing is that if the index increases, it means that producers are getting a larger share of the total surplus at the expense of consumers. However, what it doesn't reflect is the total size of the surplus. So it could be that the index increases, meaning that consumers get a smaller share in the pie. But if the pie itself increases, the smaller share in the bigger pie could be better than the bigger share in the smaller pie. So we don't have a complete picture, but partially at least we know that that consumers are getting less and firms get more. That I showed.
Those limitations.
Again, I showed it. So as always, in a model you have some assumptions. But in a fairly general way, in a relatively the Cournot model, but also also price competition with linear demand functions. The result is that again, an increase in the modified AHI means that firms are getting more and consumers get less. In percentage terms.
In percentage terms, and in spite of those limitations, these are structural indicators, right? And
exactly.
In order to assess a merger's impact, that has, of course, some relevance as a screen or in order to characterize a market. But then in order to assess, for example, unilateral price effects, I think maybe there it's where we're lagging a bit in terms of indicators that might help factor common ownership in, as I said, apart from fully fledged merger simulations, but there you can factor in whatever you want or
exactly.
nearly whatever you want.
Exactly. The beauty of screens is that you can get very quickly and, you know, without a lot of work, you can get results. But obviously the results are just give you some indications.
Now, from what I gather, from an horizontal perspective in the market with a common ownership structure in rivals, there's a lot of bad things to it. Is there any good side to stakes on competitors, on rivals, for any dimension that could be relevant for consumer welfare?
Yes, so the early literature on common and cross ownership, by the way, we need to make a distinction between the
common
two.
Ownership and cross-ownership.
Common ownership is when the same shareholders hold stakes in different firms. Cross ownership is when firms have stakes in other firms.
Which is much worse, I gather.
Which is much worse because you can then get a multiplier effect, meaning that a 10% stake in a rival could effectively be much more than 10% if the two firms are linked to other firms which are linked to the same firms. So if firm one holds a stake in firm two, say it holds 10%, the 10% could effectively be even 30% if firm two holds a stake in firm three and three holds a stake in firm one. Because then you get a whole system going on and the profits are interrelated. And
which doesn't happen to the same extent with common ownership.
It doesn't happen at all with common ownership. With common ownership, if you are 10%, it's 10%, that's the end of the story. So with cross ownership, you can have the multiplier effect. So it could be even worse. So the early literature studied static models. Firms set prices or quantities, and then people studied both unilateral effects, but also coordinated effects, you know, collusion. And the literature is more or less conclusive, showing that the effect is negative. So it leads to softer competition in the Cournot model, softer competition in the Bertrand model, softer competition in, in the hoteling model. It facilitates collusion. So, you know, if you look at this early literature, the picture is pretty bad. And basically you don't see any bright side of common ownership, of cross ownership. But recently, a literature has developed that studies models in which firms first invest, and the investment could be in cost reduction or in developing new products. And after firms invest in innovation, they compete by setting prices or quantities. And then the literature has shown that cross ownership could actually promote investments in ways that outweigh the negative effects on the price or quantity competition that follows. If you believe that an industry features massive investments, I mean, these are important, then there is a hope. I mean, I don't know if you can call it what, but you might be able to find that cross-ownership can have beneficial effects on consumers.
Very well. And I know, Yossi, that you have also looked at some data on how decisions or acquisitions of stakes in rivals change when leniency programs are introduced. What are your findings on that, and what kind of rationale do you put to explain them?
So this is a joint paper with Sven Heim and Kai Huschelrath and Uli Leitenberger. And together we looked at the question of whether indeed cross-ownership is anti-competitive. The reason why we wanted to examine this issue is that we know from the theory, which I already talked about, we know that cross-ownership could be could have harmful effects if you don't take investment into account. Given that the theoretical literature all indicated that it has bad effects, the interesting question is, you know, is the theory correct? How do we know? And the problem was that we didn't have too many empirical evidence on the issue. So we decided to use leniency programs as a way to provide an answer. Let me say that it's not our invention. Other people have used leniency programs before. The idea is that leniency programs, what they do is they are a negative shock to collusive agreements. If you have a collusive agreement, you know that the leniency program is going to destabilize it. And then you need to react. And that's the idea. And it has been used before. We use it as well. So what we show is that once a leniency program is introduced, we see a large increase in cross-ownership. So first of all, in the number of transactions. So, you know, every year firms invest in rivals, but surprisingly, in a year when a leniency program is introduced, we see a spike. The number of transactions increases by 41%, which is quite substantial. The deal value, how much money is spent on acquiring stakes in rivals, increases by more than 100%. So, you know, it's a big effect. And what we do is we try to control for other reasons why firms may invest in other firms. So we throw various controls. And then once you control for possible other reasons, you still get this 41% and over 100% in the deal value. And what is even more interesting is that if you look at non-horizontal transactions, you don't see the effect at all. If you look at cross-border transactions, like a Portuguese firm buying a French firm or vice versa, you don't see the effect. Only Portuguese on Portuguese and for French or French. And moreover, you don't see an effect in countries that have weak antitrust enforcement. This is important because obviously if you have a collusive agreement in a country where you don't care about antitrust enforcement, obviously you are not too worried about the leniency program because, you know, they are not effective anyway. So the effect exists only in countries where you have an effective enforcement, where firms might be afraid that the leniency program is going to destabilize their agreement. Mm-hmm. And since the literature showed that cross-ownership can stabilize collusive agreements, we think that this is the way to deal with the negative shock.
Which is actually incredibly interesting and quite telling. And it seems quite robust results as well.
It turns out to be very robust. And, you know, as usual with empirical papers, we got lots of questions. How do you know that the effect is there if you do this or that or the other? And these suggestions were all, you know, good. And we tried. And whatever we tried, the effect was still there. I mean, to me, it was very surprising. I'm not an empirical guy. I'm a theory guy, and my colleagues are the empirical guys. So to me, it was really surprising to see how, you know, you try to do this and that and the other, and you cut the data in various ways. And, you know, people people had valid arguments, because essentially what we do is a diff in diff exercise before and after the leniency program in the country where it was introduced relative to control. Question is, what do you have in the control? Countries that never introduced the leniency program, countries that already had it. So, you know, you can cut the data in many different ways by, you know, changing the control group, but basically whatever you do, the effect is still there.
The effect is still there.
To me, it was really surprising.
No, indeed, and telling. Yossi, thank you so much. It was a great pleasure to do this podcast with you.
The pleasure was mine.